gospel reading today is from the Gospel of John, chapter 11, verses 32 through 44. When Mary arrived and saw Jesus, she fell at his feet and said, "Lord, if only you had been here, my brother would not have died." Then Jesus saw her weeping and saw the other people wailing, and a deep anger welled up within him. And he was deeply troubled. "Where have you put him?" he asked. They told him, "Lord, come and see." Then Jesus wept. The people who were standing nearby said, "See how much he loved him." But some said, "This man healed a blind man. Couldn't he have kept Lazarus from dying?" Jesus was still angry as he arrived at the tomb, a cave with a stone rolled across the entrance. "Roll the stone aside," Jesus told them. But Martha, the dead man's sister, protested, "Lord, he has been dead for days. The smell will be terrible." Jesus responded, "Didn't I tell you that you would see God's glory if you believe?" So they rolled the stone aside. Then Jesus looked up to heaven and said, "Father, thank you for hearing me. You always hear me, but I said it out loud for the sake of all these people standing here, so they will believe you sent me." Then Jesus shouted, "Lazarus, come out!" And the dead man came out, his hands and face wrapped in grave clothes, his face wrapped in a headcloth. Jesus told them, "Unwrap him and let him go." This is the word of the Lord. Oh, man, this week did not go the way I expected. Wednesday night, of course, went to bed with a list of things to do the next day. Had a few house projects I needed to work on. There was a couple loose tiles in the kitchen that needed to be reset. There was a terrace in the backyard I was working on. Gianna woke me up, our baby's 10 months old, for those of you who haven't seen her. And she woke me up at 6 in the morning, and I took her out into the living room to let Heather keep sleeping, and was sipping my coffee, and noticed that as the sun was starting to come up, the light was really weird, pretty orange. Looked out the window and saw the column of smoke rising, and got on my phone, looked up where it was. It was 20 miles away in Concord, pretty safe. Got in the shower, got ready for my day. As I got out, there was starting to be ash falling from the sky. And they were starting to evacuate the other side of paradise. And I said, you know what? When they evacuate paradise, it gets really messy. We should probably head down to Chico now. So I woke Heather up, and we leisurely put some stuff in the car. And I said, you know what? I hate evacuating. We've done it like 3 times this summer. And how much stuff do I really want to have to put back? Let's not take that much. We put a few things in the car, headed out. Of course, as the rest of the day went, that fire burned a lot of stuff and did an incredible amount of damage. And we did not get back in, and our house is gone. Did not find that out until Thursday night. And as I spent most of the day Thursday wondering, not knowing whether our house had made it or not, realized how much of that is just stuff. We got out with each other, safe. That those relationships, the people who we love and have with us, are what matters so much more than buildings. There were so many people up there who did not get out. I've got Cal Fire friends, and they are finding hundreds and hundreds of bodies they can't identify yet because everybody's burned. And the incredible gratitude of being out safe and alive, the incredible tragedy of all of the people who did not make it out safe and alive. I am so grateful that this was the text for the sermon today. That this was the liturgy, because this passage, John is so intentional, by the way. The other gospel writers kind of tell the story probably as it happened. John has a structure. 7's his favorite number. In Revelation, everything is set in 7's. In the gospel of John, he intentionally includes only 7 miracles. And every single one of the miracles John tells about, he's trying to make a bigger point. The feeding of the 5,000 isn't about Jesus miraculously providing bread. It is about Jesus being the source of all our life, the sustenance that gives us life and becomes part of us and keeps us going. Jesus healing the blind man isn't about Jesus' ability to give sight. It's about Jesus giving all of us who are all blind the ability to see something more clearly. The seventh miracle is, of course, the biggest one. John crescendos up to this, which is Jesus raising Lazarus from the dead. And John is so much telling this story about something more than just the miracle of Jesus healing Lazarus from the dead. And this is one of my favorite stories in Scripture because of how much we can all identify with this, right? The story starts here when Mary arrived. Jesus and Mary finally connect. Mary's first question is the same one all of us have. Where were you? Why? My brother died. Clearly, if you loved us, you would have been here and this wouldn't have happened. This is, of course, how we all feel when we face loss, when there's somebody that we love that isn't with us anymore. God, if only you'd have been here. My spouse wouldn't have died. My mom wouldn't have died. My brother wouldn't have died. Why? Where? If you love us, where are you in this? And that's why this is one of my favorite pictures of God in the entire Bible. John, of course, insists that if we've seen Jesus, Jesus says to Thomas here in about three chapters later, Thomas says, Lord, just show us the Father and we'll be satisfied. And Jesus says, if you've seen me, you've seen the Father. So whatever we see Jesus doing is a picture of what God is like and what God is doing. And we get a picture here of precisely where God is in the middle of our loss, in the middle of our tragedy. When Jesus saw her weeping and saw the other people wailing with her, a deep anger welled up within him, and he was disturbed in his spirit. You know what? As mad and frustrated as we get at loss, at having somebody we love taken from us, however this works, God is madder. Jesus is here weeping with Mary. God is at least as troubled by our loss and our suffering as we are. And I love that that's not where the story ends, right? Jesus weeps, and then he goes to the tomb. And he has them move the stone, and he calls forth Lazarus. Right before this, Martha had met him out of town. And at the time, there was not an agreement among the Jews as to whether there was an afterlife. Many of the Jews, the Pharisees, believed there was one. The Sadducees believed there wasn't. There was kind of a big discussion about whether or not there was a resurrection. And Jesus' response to Martha in verse 25, Jesus said, I am the resurrection and the life. Anyone who believes in me will live even though they die. Everyone who lives in me and believes in me will never die. Of course, everybody dies, right? That's part of the story. Even though Lazarus is resurrected, he's not still with us. He died again. Death is a part of this world. Unfortunately, there's no undoing that. Our grand history of humans in curing death is still 0 for 8 trillion. We're not very good at it. We can't stop it. And yet when we encounter it, every time it comes, I mean, the only way to avoid grief and tragedy is not to love. Because when that is precisely what grief is. We often think of grief as something negative, but it's not. Grief is simply what love is when you lose someone, something you care about. Grief is love. It's what love looks like. It's something God is experiencing in the middle of this with us as well. Where is God when we lose someone? With us. Jesus is with us. Jesus is weeping and grieving with us because God loves even more than we do. Our love comes from God. That love is a gift. It is something we can let flow through us. The gift of the people who we've loved is a gift from God. And God is with us in the tragedy of not having them with us. We are all in that space between Lazarus dying and Jesus saying, come out. That's where we live. That's where this world is. This miracle of Jesus healing Lazarus isn't just about Lazarus. It's about the big picture of where we all are and what it's like and what God is up to in this. And we all live in that in-between time when death is a part of our lives. But this story gives us some incredible hope that that's not where our stories end either. Death doesn't get the final say. The passage from Isaiah is one of the most beautiful things in the entire Bible. I love this. I want to read it again. Isaiah 26, 6 through 9. 20, that's not right. 25, 6 through 9. Thank you. On the mountain, the Lord of heaven's armies will spread a wonderful feast for all the people of the world. That's a pretty broad sweep, right? I think there's a spot for you there. I think that includes our loved ones. I lost my grandma this year. She's probably the person, she was my last grandparent alive, but she was the closest person to me that I've ever lost. Her name was Melva Cummings. She died 3 days after Gianna was born. We got to show her Gianna, and she died the next day. She was waiting to see Gianna. Got to hold her. Her last words were, I love you, holding the baby. I have learned so much from my grandma. My grandma was an amazing person, one of the pluckiest, most courageous people I've ever met. They say the stories your family tells are the capsule for the values your family passes on. You stop and think about it. What are the stories that keep getting told around your dinner tables? And my grandma told stories about courage. Her grandma, Grandma Sally, came out here in a covered wagon from Oklahoma with the kids because her husband had already gone ahead, 7 kids. her dad, my great-grandpa Orville, was out. They had a ranch near Turlock, and he would be out on the range with the cattle and the gun for weeks at a time at 10 years old. Grandma Sally, one winter, must have been before that, Grandpa Ben was in town, and a mountain lion had come and taken a calf from the barn and made off with it. It was the middle of the winter. There was snow. They couldn't make it through the winter without that calf. So she gets the gun and the lantern and tracks the mountain lion down in the middle of the night and brings the dead calf back because at least they've got some meat. These are the stories my grandma told. Courage was a family virtue. It was a value. It was something I saw my grandma model. My grandma, this was the story. She lost her husband in a small plane crash. My mom was 18 at the time in college. My grandpa was working for that college, went on a recruiting mission for them. The pilot got vertigo after takeoff. It was in Napa and crashed the plane into the tarmac. My grandma picked my mom up and my uncle, and the first thing she said to them was, the Lord giveth and the Lord taketh away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. That courage is something I will never forget. That courage is an inheritance more valuable than anything else I will take from my grandma's life. The way that she lived, the way that she loved and touched the world is not gone. Because, of course, it is a huge part of who I am. And these people who we are remembering today are still present because how they lived and how they loved is still very much present in every single one of us. And not only that, but these stories give us hope that their own lives are not over and that we are all going to get to be reunited. Because that's what this picture is. In that day, God will spread a feast for everyone. And just like what the last line of the story of Lazarus, what is Jesus? Lazarus walks out all bound up in grave clothes. What's Jesus do? This is the last words. Untie him, let him go. Jesus is unwrapping the chains of death. That's what he's doing. That's precisely, this is the exact same language Isaiah is using here. There's going to be a feast with a ton of wine. Amen. this is good news. There's going to be food for everyone. And there he will remove the cloud of gloom, the shadow of death that hangs over the earth. He's taking off the shroud. Those graves, the covering of death, the chains, those are going to be destroyed forever. He will swallow up death forever. This is, of course, exactly what John describes in Revelation, right? The end of the story, Revelation 21. This is another one of my favorite passages, and it's kind of echoing Isaiah. Then I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the old heaven and the old earth had disappeared, and the sea was also gone. And I saw the holy city, the new Jerusalem, coming down from God out of heaven like a bride beautifully dressed for her husband. I heard a loud shout from the throne saying, "Look, God's home is now among his people. He will live with them and they will be his people. God himself will be with them. He will wipe away every tear from their eyes and there will be no more death or sorrow or crying or pain. All these things are gone forever." And the one sitting on the throne said, "Look, I am making everything new." It's one of my other favorite pictures of God, that shout from the throne. How does God feel about this? If we're sick of the death, if we're sick of the loss, how much more is God? This shows a picture of a day where this ends. There will be a last tear shed. There will be a last death. And our God is even more excited about that than we are. Which means in this in-between time, between now and when the stone is rolled away, between when we hear the shout, everyone come out, right? That's the shout from the throne. Hey, all of you, get out here. Let's unwrap those grave clothes. Let's make all things new. We can live with hope. We can live cherishing and remembering the gift, the incredible gift that every single human being is, right? In a few minutes, we're going to read these names and light these candles, and we grieve because they're not with us, but we celebrate because they were. The love they poured out on us is not gone. It is a part of who we are and always will be. That's what love looks like. Our love for them will never be gone. And this tells us we have incredible hope that they are not gone either. Because there's coming a day when our God is going to restore all things. And that shout is going to call everyone forth. As we read these names, we'd invite you to come forward and light a candle after I read the name. And we'll ring our bell. We're remembering that these are people who we love, who are part of us, and who will always be part of us. And I'm going to light one for my grandma too, even though her name wasn't in here. We're going to read the names in order of when they died. And again, I invite you just to come forward when your loved one's name is read. Lynette Sims, December 11, 2017. Harold Edgeworth Green, December 29, 2017. Fred Albert Zelish, December 30, 2017. Marianne Dawson Stewart, January 22, 2018. Melva Lorraine Baldwin. Russell Qualls, February 8, 2018. Dorothy Rumbaugh, March 2018. Flo Cooper, March 19, 2018. Melba Lorraine Whitehead, March 22, 2018. Karen Lilyblade, April 2018. Craig Holmberg, April 17, 2018. Lawrence Kent Dinsdale, May 27, 2018. Anna Germishausen, June 2, 2018. Martha Kessler, June 19, 2018. Alvin Harley Hornbuckle, July 15, 2018. John Michael Hawk, July 19, 2018. Richard Steve Kranick, September 2, 2018. We remember those we love. And we remember that death is not the most powerful force in the universe. Love is. That the love of our God is stronger than death. And that is the same love that flows through us, which means our love is stronger than death as well. We remember that death does not get the last word. The shout from the throne does. The last word is our God coming to get us, coming to restore all things and make all things new. And so we, like my grandma, can face each day with courage. We can know that it's going to be okay because our God has got us and has got this.